welcome to Real Geeks. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
Hey.
And today, bringing the storm, bringing the love, it's Thor, Love and Thunder.
Kids, get the popcorn out. Let me tell you the story of the space Viking, Thor Odinson. He was no ordinary man. He was a god. After saving planet Earth for the 500th time, Thor set off on a new journey. Well, he got in shape. He went from dad bod to god bod. And after all that, Mjolnir, he reclaimed his title as the one and only Thor. Oh, spoke too soon.
Jane?
The old ex-girlfriend.
What's it been like? 3, 4 years?
8 years, 7 months, and 6 days, give or take.
Am I, sensing feelings?
Well, you're right.
The only ones who gods care about is themselves.
So this is my vow.
All gods will die.
I just want to say that was very, very impressive what you did back there.
It's just my first bad guy.
You never forget your first.
You are not like the other gods of Kiln. You have something worth fighting for.
Let's see who you are. I take off your disguise. And flip!
Oh.
You flip too hard, damn it!
Should we help him? I mean, eventually. Grape.
Oh, Taika Waititi. Thank you. Thank you.
Seriously. So far, that man has not fucked up. And he managed to make a Hitler comedy out of it. So, like, yeah. I feel like the worst is either behind us or a mountain of, oh, my God, what the fuck have you milkshake ducked is in the horizon. But this is lovely. I love it. I'm just starting the episode off the bat by just, like, gushing wildly. I'm not too sure where it falls in terms of like my favorite MCU films or whatever, but I can tell you this is for sure in one of my like top 10 cozy happy films.
Yeah. Same here. Like the first thing I was gonna say is this movie, I think particularly for a Marvel film, is really more heartwarming and uplifting than it has any right to be.
Yeah, it is a children's movie. More like some of these are like they're all comic book movies, and comic book movies are for children, and comics for children. And it's like, yeah. Yes, it is true. Yes, Alan Moore. I know, Alan. You can stop, please. Here's a couple of pounds. Go buy yourself a pint, please. But this is unabashedly embracing that spirit and everything that comes with that spirit without any shame whatsoever. This is like your inner kid on steroids and listening to just that one album by GNR. Yeah. This is what it felt like as a kid in the 90s and 80s when you got like enough money to buy one album and it didn't suck and it became your life for the next 6 fucking months. Thor picks an album and it becomes his. It's just this is amazing. This is fan fucking tastic. It is a giant wedding cake made of ice cream that is melting. And you have to eat it very quickly And the further you get into it, the messier it is. And eventually you kind of become the ice cream cake. You are covered in it so much.
Yeah, yeah.
This is so much ice cream cake, it covers you and you're sticky. This movie will make you sticky, and not just because Chris Hemsworth is in it.
Oh, not even just Hemsworth, but Asgardian ass.
Everyone. And yes, Asgardian ass, of course. Lovely. Well done.
Yeah.
Well done. Very nice. Very nice. We've been interested. So someone did. No, I won't say someone, because the amount of layering and such that go into it, teams worked on that shot. And so multiple teams of people for probably like for those shots, weeks on end, were staring at his ass and like shading it so that it fits in perfectly with the background. It just how are we doing on today's left cheek? secondary shading. I'm making sure that there is really good particulate matter in front of it. I want this to look photorealistic, as if it was really there. And that means, you know, like having a little dust floating in front of that butt.
Well, and also, just as someone who enjoys those like small claims that, like, yeah, they're trivial, but it's stuff that you know nobody else can say. Can you imagine being the person on this movie who can honestly say that they were the first person to work on Chris Hemsworth's ass?
I worked on Chris Hemsworth's ass before he was famous. this is an adaptation of Jason Aaron's fantastic Thor run from, I want to say, 2013 to 2020, maybe 21, something like that. It's practically a decade where he was handed all of the Thor books and all of the narrative after Siege had completed. Which had been a big cross continuity thing at Marvel.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, we broke the Asgardians. Give them to this guy. Here, fix this. And he did beautifully over this incredible saga that in comics saw Thor Odinson become unworthy. And lose the ability to wield Mjolnir. Jane Foster, of course, pick it up and become the mighty Thor. We got something that we didn't see in this, but I suspect is still yet to come. The War Thor, Volstagg, picks up a hammer, I believe, a Stormbreaker. Stormbreaker from the Ultimate X-Men or the Ultimate Marvel Universe that fell through a portal in time and space and ended up in the 616. Volstagg picked up that Stormbreaker and became like Ultimate Volstagg Thor, War Thor.
I could see that, but like I don't, for obvious reasons, I don't think they'd be able to do that specifically. But there are things here where, like, we have Valkyrie refer to Jane several times as a Thor.
Yeah, and the mighty Thor as well. At various points, she's called the mighty Thor. As well in that run was the entire War of the Realms, a years-long saga across, well, all of the nine realms. And actually, during it, the inclusion of a tenth realm in which Angela from Spawn is from. It's called Heaven, and they are a ultra-capitalist society of angels who have a blood feud with the Asgardians.
Because of course they do.
Yeah, which is all due to Todd McFarlane losing a lawsuit to Neil Gaiman, which is part of the same lawsuit in which he incorrectly claimed that he owned Miracle Man / Marvel Man, which ended up going to Neil Gaiman in essentially, well, who the fuck owns this? Why don't we give it to the guy who just won this case? Okay. Hey, Neil Gaiman, would you like all the rights to Marvel Man / Miracle Man? Oh, yes, please.
Yeah. I who would say no?
Right. A bunch of other stuff happens. We get Kid Loki at the same time, et cetera, et cetera. It's wonderful. Please, please go read it. It will take you quite a while because it is, like I said, about 8 years of comic books. The future and past Thors fighting together. And it's this incredible epic. And so we got like a truncated version in here where we get Jane as the Mighty Thor. And Gore the God Butcher, who is the villain of the entire, like, there are two main villains in the entire, like, Jason Aaron run. Gore is one of them, and performance-wise, very different, but more or less the same story. Gore's doing what Gore does. This is what Gore does. You got it. It's pretty straightforward. We'll get to that. The other one, however, who created and raged the War of the Realms was Malekith. And here's the thing. I don't know if it was written before or at, like, plotted out before or after Thor the Dark World and our really boring Malekith by Christopher Eccleston, but comic book Malekith is amazing. He's smarmy. He's full of himself. He is dangerous. He's like the most dangerous guy in the room. If he's in a scene, someone's fucking dying for 8 years.
I'm not 100% sure, but I vaguely remember reading something about this, and I think comic book Malekith would have been after Dark World. Because I think that was another one of those, we need you to fix this things.
Yeah, good, because it's not that it reads that way, but it's like, this is Malekith? Holy fucking shit. Yeah. Bring this back.
I think we should also note Dark World Malekith was not Christopher Eccleston's fault.
No, he just, you know, like, He got fucked into that by Marvel when they were still early days and had no clue what the fuck they were doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course he'll let you know that at length, loudly. As with everything. It's amazing how everything he touches is shit. And I don't mean that like the product is. I love everything he's in. It's delightful camp. But if the man doesn't want to be in crap, stop taking roles in crap. And I don't mean you may have misjudged a movie or something. I mean, G.I. Joe is going to be a crap movie, even if it's balls awesome. I'm sorry. This isn't like the height of Thespiana. But man, come on.
Well,
work with us.
With G.I. Joe specifically, I would suggest one of two possibilities. The role that he was pitched and signed up for was not what was in the movie, or what was on the script. It looked good on the script, but once that movie was finally put together, it fell apart.
Oh, I know, but that's forest for the trees. Like, sir, you have been handed a script that on the cover says G.I. Joe. Anything you do from this point forward in engaging with this is in full consent with the fact that it is a movie about toys. Stop. if you don't want to be in it, just don't. It's okay.
And even there, I would also suggest, I know at one point it was said that the G.I. Joe movie was supposed to be closer to the comic books than the toys in the 80s cartoon. And the comic books were a little more adult oriented, like a little more serious, a little more dramatic.
Oh, they were fantastic. I remember having a few.
And again, the movie was not what it was sold as.
However, this pretty much is exactly what it was sold as. Now, there was a little bit of lying in the initial marketing where they said Asgard has its new king and she needs to find her queen. It got nothing to do with that. Nothing. Fucking all. I mean, she hits on like a handmaiden of Zeus at one point, and that was cool. But otherwise, nah. Just don't let me forget this, because I don't want to go into this too early, because it's not that other thing. It's what I think is coming next. Don't let me forget that, because I just don't want to launch into it so soon. everyone from Thor Ragnarok is back, except for the Grandmaster, who apparently had filmed some scenes and just got cut.
That's fair. Like, with the final product, I don't know where you would put him.
I mean, yeah, it probably would have been a cameo where, like, maybe he's, like, living with the Asgardians or something, or, like... He would have been hanging out at Omnipotent City.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, he could have been there as, like, a ticket taker for that big gathering or something.
Ooh, mean.
like, I'm just saying,
shade to the Grandmaster. That man is a fucking, like, celestial. Damn.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that I like something that would be small enough to just be a cameo, but still kind of fitting, because the last time we saw the Grandmaster, that man has fallen and fallen far.
Oh yeah, but we have seen two things that the Grandmaster has done that would come up with this. Like, there would be a third example of it. The Grandmaster is a DJ. And he would be DJing. He would have been in there DJing. And so we previously saw that in a hologram on his birthday ship when he was playing the keyboard in celebration of his birthday. We then saw that in What If, where he was DJing the intergalactic party.
Release the phone.
I'm sad that we didn't get to see him return, and I'm sad that we didn't get to see him on his scoot either.
Well, and also, I think with you bringing that up, another possibility is with the orgy that Zeus kept bringing up, because it's Zeus, so of course he did.
The orgy.
They could have teased that and have a scene of the Grandmaster DJing that.
Either DJing, I mean, or as you said, he would be like truly fallen and like applying lotion. he's the lotion boy.
Yeah.
That's not lotion. Lotion boy. He comes over like with a big vat, and it's just Jeff Goldblum in like some trunks. They don't let him have pants or a shirt or anything. Of course, everyone else on the original Avengers has gone through, like, story arcs. They've had their complete story arcs. They're mortal, so, like, you have your life, you have your story, and then, like, it might continue a little bit. It might not. Sorry, Nat. Or whatever the hell is happening with Steve Rogers. I still expect that we'll someday see an old Steve Rogers. Whether or not he'll ever return as Captain America is not necessarily necessary.
Steve Rogers, I think...
Like Old Man Rogers, the same way he showed up as like the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Old Man Rogers. I think we'll probably see something like that, which allows Sam Wilson to remain Captain America, which will go all the way up to the incursion, and probably.
No, like I knew exactly what you were thinking of. It, I think my hesitation was more where they've just started the Sam Wilson Captain America.
Oh, it's not going to be for a while.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, like, we're nowhere near that point. So I was sitting here kind of going, I don't want to say that I don't see it, but I'm also going, oh, when do you bring him in?
I'm thinking Secret War or post-Secret War. You have to allow the reestablishment of, like, Nick Fury to come first.
Yeah.
Because he's already been teased and have all of that. So you've got S.W.O.R.D., right? And then there'll be the reestablishment of S.H.I.E.L.D. And that will eventually be under Old Man Rogers.
Oh, yeah. I think post-Secret Wars would make sense. And just while we're on the subject, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is not goddamn canon.
It's not canon, but they'll probably post Incursion make a new version that up with a new version of the canon that does wrap it in. So currently, no. Later, we'll see.
My only thing with that whole argument is, okay, if Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is canon, where were they during Falcon and the Winter Soldier?
Yeah, it's only canon in the sense that it's a multiverse. So yes, technically it is happening out there. So Thor, however, is immortal. You know, until he gets killed, he done keep living on. And so he's had various story arcs. He learned how to be a hero for the good sake, not like the sake of his own ego and for people to think he's a hero and for his belief that being a great warrior makes him worthy of wielding power. You know, so he learned humility in the first one. The second one, he didn't really learn much. That was more connective tissue and like other people. His mom and his brother, his mom dies. His brother fake dies. His father disappears, and technically the cosmos falls into various forms of anarchy, which Thanos, of course, then uses to come to power. And then Loki died.
And then other stuff happened.
And then Loki died again. And then Loki died again. That was great.
That was a great line from Korg.
Yeah, we'll get into format of this because I really like that. But you got Thor left and he's wandering. He knows that, you know, he knows what it is to be a good person because of Thor 1. He knows what his true power and potential is and like has confidence in himself because of Thor Ragnarok. Like, you know, he's an upstanding guy, but he has no direction. He has all this potential and no direction. He has no idea what he's supposed to do next. There's no Avengers anymore. At least, you know, like they're gone. You know, like that team's gone. Whatever team is around now is like, I don't know. These are new kids. Ah, freshmen. Ew. You never want to speak to the freshmen. and so he's following around the Guardians of the Galaxy, just kind of like hobo Ronin-ing himself about whenever shit gets too hot for the Guardians, they ask him to help, and he ends the fight one way or another rather quickly.
Yeah.
No returns.
No, he's basically that obnoxious roommate that takes over everything and every once in a blue moon will actually help out with something.
Yeah, like maybe he's the one that actually like pays the rent, but sweet fucking Jesus, you have to do everything.
Yeah.
He's a pig. He's lazy. He doesn't do crap. And it's just, okay, well, it's a free rent, but, you know, because he's the big red button. If shit goes to fuck, hit the big red button and you don't have to worry anymore. The big red button will go take care of it for the most part. But however, the big red button is really fucking clingy. because he's alone and he's lost everyone. He's a survivor, and so much of this movie is about like aspects of like that normal survivor's guilt that you get by just outliving your family and friends. Like, this is one of those more closer to universal, like majority of people kind of thing, where like,
yeah,
eventually you find yourself without your parents. Eventually you are, you're away from friends groups and they're gone. Like people die. People leave and you never see them again. And that's what this Thor is. It's a guy who has an everyday trauma of simply having never died along with everyone he knows.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, so much of his arc in general is loss and trauma. And here, like, this is the tail end of that. Like, it's about dealing with it and coming out of trauma and kind of beginning anew.
Yeah, exactly. This is the healing. This is the healing. Everything previous was kind of like the trauma. Killing Thanos, which was the last time we saw him, like helping to kill Thanos was catharsis. Yes, absolutely. But that shit ain't healing you.
No.
That's just, okay, now you can start. And that's what this film is. It's him coming to terms with everything. And then through having, like, meeting the mighty Thor and him rekindling his relationship with Jane and her stage four cancer, so like immediate impending death, he gets like one last chance to kind of live through that experience, not right, but with experience. It's like, okay, this is how this is going to go. I'm not going to let it traumatize me. I'm going to turn it into something that will make me stronger rather than hurt me again. And so instead of like anger, instead of rejection, instead of all this like stuff, he has learned to just love and be happy with the love that he was able to experience with the people that matters to him. Holy fucking shit.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
is my favorite Thor. Backtracking for one moment. When I read the entirety of Jason Aaron's run, I wasn't really like a Thor fan. I love Thor Love and Thunder, obviously. Like, but a lot of that is Chris Hemsworth, being Chris Hemsworth. He's a fantastic comedic yeah. actor. He's a lot of fun to watch. And Taika Waititi can do a good movie. He making good film, very good. Very good, good film. And so, like, I didn't go into it being like, yay, Thor. I liked Loki. Loki, Loki, Loki. Loki is, of course, more fun. But...
Oh, absolutely.
I came out of it with Thor being my favorite Marvel character. And that entire run is the all-star Superman of Thor comics. It's 8 years long instead of 12 issues. But it is the exact same point. It is the exact same narrative. That's what it is. It is the best idea of Thor. It is the encapsulation and everything else. It has a understanding of the power of narrative, of stories, the importance of stories, and how these are all aspects of stories, and that's what matters. It's about being worthy. It's about trauma. It's about surviving. It's about making choices for the greater good. And there's all like it. Obviously, it's part of an adaptation of this, but like there's a lot of that carries over so effectively and efficiently. Like, how the hell do you condense 8 years into 2 hours? I mean, my mistake. 1 hour, 59 minutes exactly. And yet, effectively,
yeah,
with a lot of, like, heart and comedy, done.
Oh, yeah, like, with the movie, for me, I think the worst thing that I can say about it is there are aspects where I would have liked to have had more.
Yeah, I'll gladly take more, but that just means that, like, I'm hungry for it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm hungry for it. And I think, so what I was leading into earlier, and I just didn't want to jump into it immediately, is I don't think we're done with this version yet. I think we're going to get some sort of War of the Realms. And, like, the future King Thor and the past Child Thor. And we're going to get Mighty Thor come back from Asgard with the rest of Asgard. Because there's a really important thing that was reiterated constantly in this movie. And it's there is no eternal, like, reward. There is no afterlife. You die. That's it. It wasn't like people like talking, like atheist philosophy. It was a god directly saying, "Oh no, when you die, you're gone. That's it. Just." And yet, spoilers. Yeah,
spoilers, with one of the stingers that might be debatable.
Yeah, yeah, Jane eventually succumbs to her cancer, as occurs in the comics, because while Thor, Mighty Thor, doesn't have cancer and is perfectly healthy, every time she drops that persona, the magical process strips her body of the chemo drugs because they're a toxin. They are a toxin. And so the magic going, "Well, gee whiz, I just want to make sure she's okay," obliterates it. And so anytime she drops out of Thor, she is actually worse off than when she went into being Thor, despite her body, like, not aging in that time period. It just, like, it's stripping away layers of chemotherapy from her. And so she eventually dies, and she ends up at the gates of Valhalla, and she is welcomed by Heimdall.
Yeah, Heimdall is still the doorman.
Unfortunately, like, please get that man a seat at least.
Yeah.
He can still see everything because he saw her interacting with his son, Axel. And it's... Here's the thing. So by them having that afterlife, it proves a truth from the comics. Valhalla is real. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But it's a location. It's a place you can go. It's very difficult to get to, but it is a place in the universe. She's not dead, quote unquote. This is the point in the story where someone who achieves apotheosis, that is, becoming such a hero they become a god via narrative, goes to hell. This is an ancient tale that has been retold and retold. It's even in the Jesus, like, myth or story or whatever you want to call it. Don't want to insult you. Once achieving an aspect of divinity, they have to travel to the land of the dead, and they will return with either people or a promise of eternal life. This is a recurring, and she is going to, as per the Asgardian cycle occurring in comics, bring Asgard back. Everyone will return. Everyone will return. And that'll be in time for the incursion. And she's going to be at the incursion on Earth in the final battle with Sam Wilson, Captain America, and the Young Avengers, because, like, this is what that layering has been leading to. these are the new Avengers. And they come together and they try to stop the incursion, and the incursion happens anyway because everything's going to fuck.
Yeah.
We are at maybe the first quarter of her story. So, and you know where this is leading. very early this morning, I got in a short argument with a Democratic member, Democratic Party member, who I'm not going to name because I don't want it to become a thing, but the points have to be addressed.
Yeah.
Because it's such a dramatic misunderstanding of what was happening. And they were claiming that the movie was sexist because it, quote unquote, fridged Jane. Now, for those who are unaware, fridging is, it goes back to the introduction of Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern, who had a girlfriend for, I want to say, 3 to 6 issues, at which point, out of the blue and with no narrative reason other than to turn Kyle, who was until then a happy-go-lucky character who stumbled into the power of the entire Green Lantern Corps, because he was the only Green Lantern at the time.
Yeah.
It was supposed to, like, give him tragic purpose. And so his girlfriend gets brutally murdered and stuffed into a fridge. And that's how he discovers her. It's terrible. It's bad writing. It's a trope that is sexist. It's a sexist trope. Jane was not fridge.
No.
This is a fundamental misunderstanding, not only of what occurred in the movie, but what is foreshadowed at the end of the film and occurred in the comics. Jane has achieved apotheosis by her own choice to be a hero, despite the fact it will kill her. She went the distance, and now she gets the reward. And the reward is, congrats, you get to be a god in Valhalla, and she is going to reject death again and go chase being a hero, and she's going to bring all the Asgardians back. This is coming.
Yeah.
This saga, the Jason Aaron saga on film, is not done yet. I am like 99% sure of that because of the, not only the end credit that shows, despite the film repeatedly telling you this is not possible, there is an afterlife. That means they are still technically alive. They are acting characters in the MCU. And then we get at the very, very, very end of the film, the line, you know, like the famous James Bond line, Thor will return. And yes, Odinson will be back.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure he will. Sure, yeah. Odinson's coming back. Thunder will be there. Do you really think that's the Thor they're talking about?
Yeah, there's... The lovely thing there is that there are so many ways that can go. But just to go back to that Twitter argument... For a second...
He's what I found.
Quiet, Siri. I did just want to mention how, like, I saw you tweet about it, and then I went to go and read her points because, you know, I love to try to figure out people's train of thoughts, see where they're coming from.
Oh yeah.
And I flat out said to you over Twitter, like, thank you, I needed you to explain that to me because I had no clue. Like, reading her tweets, I got completely lost. I had no idea what she was talking about. And after you explained it, I was like, okay, I can see one thing that maybe is what she was referring to. But, oh, how did I put this? The leap in logic, it was the equivalent of flying a plane out to Vancouver to go and get groceries when you could have just gone to the convenience store down the street that had everything you need at a cheaper price.
Yeah. And it's completely ignoring that the entire point of Gore's story arc is that that is a flawed way of writing a character. Like, you know who does get fridged in this, and who that person did not refer to? Instead, they chose to claim that Jane's story had been dismissed while dismissing Jane's story arc.
Yeah.
Themselves. So it's like, physician, heal thyself. But you know who did get fridged in this? The first love. The child gets fridged. The movie begins with a child dying, and that inspiring so much fucking anger and hate in Gore that he starts slaughtering pantheons en masse. That is proving, like, that's the point. It's a toxic narrative. And look what it did to Gore. And how is it solved at the end? Thor says you don't need to turn loss into revenge. You can turn it into love. You can just be happy that you had that and hold on to that. And what does that result in? It results in Gore in his last moment bringing love back to life, unfridging her, and abandoning the entire premise. This film is about how fridging doesn't fucking work as a premise. It is a bad narrative choice.
And the hilarious thing is, if you even think about it, Gore the God Butcher does not do a whole lot of God Butchering in the movie.
No, not in the movie. We get a couple of God Butchers. Yeah, I expected him to, like, show up at Omnipotency.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it did kind of need that moment.
Yeah, like, I was surprised that didn't come, but that just means that we're going to get more of it. So that could be fun.
Yeah.
As well, like, we get a lot of, like, expositionary shots. They do show, not tell, but it's while they're telling.
Yeah.
And it's literally just, like, a screen and images going by, and you see recreations of panels from the comics when Gore had slaughtered various gods. The time scale on this is dramatically shrunk. The original story takes place over, like, 1,500 years. It's like a young Thor came across Gore while Gore was slaughtering Algonquin gods and sending them across the sea to as, like, warnings and heedings to the Viking gods.
Yeah.
And so he went and he had, like, an early adventure defeating Gore. And so Gore, like, stewed for 1,500 years being like, I'm going to get that fucking Thor kid. And, you know, it then flies off like billions of years in the future. And you get at the end of time, King Thor sitting on, like, the ruins of Asgard fighting an eternal war against Gore. It's terrific. I understand why it got like truncated. You know, it's a good one and done. Christian Bale kicked the fucking shit out of that. Wow. I mean, obviously he's a great actor, but damn.
Yeah, but I mean, number one, he goes from Gore the God Butcher to basically Gore the Pied Piper, and it still works.
But oh, yeah.
Also, with some of the choices that Bale makes, you could technically say that Christian Bale is the first actor to play both Batman and the Joker.
Yes, I was exactly thinking that there are exact moments in this when you're like, oh yeah, you worked closely with Heath Ledger when he was making the Joker character that he had in Dark Knight. Oh my God. This is Christian Bale's, not impression, because that cheapens it.
Yeah. And recreation. It really does not feel like an impression.
No, it's not. Nothing Christian Bale ever does is a fucking impression.
True.
It's incredible. That man inhabits. Jared Leto's an asshole. Christian Bale's the one who inhabits roles.
Yeah.
But holy fucking shit. He's absolutely, like, channeling Heath Ledger's performance. And I had read a couple of reviews, and like I think Movie Bob said, like, oh god damn, that is one of like the more scary performances that we've ever seen in Marvel. And it's like, yeah, that, no, it's actually, yeah, it's frankly fucking disturbing.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's moments where his gore is almost comedic, and but then there's also moments where it's like, especially when a lot of he has children as prisoners, it's like, I'm worried right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, like he is a childhood nightmare come to life. And those scenes are so well done in terms of like, sometimes kids are really goddamn annoying in films. Those kids weren't.
They could have been
really annoying, but like Taika knows how to use kids with in a way that's like realistic, but not frustrating on film. He's not a lazy creator. He's so goddamn good. Oh god, he's so good.
Totally. A lot of what they do with the kidnapped Asgardian children is almost 80s Spielberg levels of child empowering.
Yes, especially when they literally get the power of Thor at the end, which is, can you be more like direct in your reference of like the children are the future and you must hand them on like, you know, everything, you know, and all of your strengths and everything. It's like they literally empower them in a scene that in terms of visual effect recreates Yggdrasil, implying that he's like channeling the Odin force to create a new like race of gods, essentially, like the new Asgardians, and they're going to be even more fucking badass.
Well, I mean, he's got the Odin force, he's got Zeus's lightning bolts, so yeah, that's probably exactly what he did.
Oh my god, so good. It's one of those tiny things where they cut off Sif's arm in this. I don't recall that ever happening. And if it did, it was quickly erased. But one of the things that occurred in the Jason Aaron run is he also loses his arm. And it gets replaced first with just a robotic arm, then the destroyer arm, then a golden arm, then eventually the destroyer arm in the distant future. There's an aspect of narrative that is really important here I should actually dive into now. So in the original Jason Aaron run, at the very end of it, it kind of corrects its metaphysical position in canon by saying, so we have this future Thor. We've told you, this is the Thor in the distant future. It's the same Thor. He has lived billions of years. And you can tell because he is also missing his arm, but he has replaced it with the destroyer's arm. And it's a great look. But in the immediate next run after Jason Aaron, he gets his arm back magically. So it's like, okay, how? And it's addressed at the end of Jason Aaron's King Thor run that this is how stories work. Like, even though there will be many different kinds of Thor in between the Thor I have told you of in the future and the Thor you are experiencing now, they're all Thor. It doesn't matter. This is a story that has been retold for literally over 1,000 years. And every version of Thor is a different version of Thor. And every version of Thor is Thor. There is no, like, popular idea. Like, thank God, Superman, bad Supermanism has not spread to Thor yet.
Thankfully.
Because Thor has always been a protector god. That's what Thor does. That is what Thor has done for thousands of years in real human history. He has served to inspire protection, and his stories are about fighting those who, like, you're afraid of, specifically frost giants, but like the frost giants were supposed to like torment humanity. Thor helped protect humanity. He was a good, noble idiot warrior god, who then also brought like life-giving thunders and rain.
Yeah.
So one of the most important things that is not said in this, but is explicitly said in the Jason Aaron run, but is very heavily hinted in this, is Thor is not who you are. Thor is what you do. If you stand up for others, you're Thor. That's what it is to be worthy to wield the power of Thor.
Wait. You could die. At least tell me your name.
It's not who I am underneath, but what I do that defines me.
Bruce?
That's the essence of all of this. That is what... why he empowers the children with the power of Thor. That is why Mighty Thor, Jane, is absolutely valid. That is why he can go through story arc after story arc, because he is an immortal, evolving, story-based creature, even within the MCU. Like, that's the thing. Unlike any other person in the MCU, Thor is defined by stories, even actively within his own universe. Like, it's part of his function. And so Thor's story is always going to be doing Thor. Like, being Thor. Doing good and finding ways to deal with the eternity that comes with it. And it's just, fuck, that's inspiring. Like, I don't know why you keep fucking Superman up, but thank God Taika Waititi's here with Thor.
Oh, yeah, no, amen to that. Like, yeah, like, this is what Henry Cavill's Superman should have been.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't mean, like, an outright himbo. He doesn't have to be a himbo. Thor is an idiot. That is canon to the fucking original sagas. Thor's an idiot. Sorry if that upsets you for some goddamn reason. It seems to upset a lot of nerds for some reason. So Himbo Thor is absolutely canon. This is all canon. Him falling through the Bifrost and breaking the gates of New Asgard. Yeah, that makes a lot of goddamn sense. That's a very Thor move. Like, all of this is Thor. And it's so beautiful to have a film that is just happy. It's happy with itself. It's comfortable with itself. And it's about him becoming comfortable with himself and learning that, like, other people are also the main characters in their own stories.
Yeah.
It's not all about you.
No, exactly. And then speaking of stories, at the very end of Korg's narrative.
That was such a brilliant fake out. Because, like, Korg is narrating this entire thing, and he narrates it much in the same way as Jason Aaron wrote the saga. And I adore this, because it's not it's a forward progressing story, but the way the narrative changes back and forth is like a dance. And so every now and then it'll stop, and so Korg's telling the story to a bunch of children on the planet that the movie opens on. So eventually Korg goes back there, and on that planet, it's implied in the movie, but it's literally said in the comic, they now worship Thor. They don't worship him as submissively or something like that. They have seen him help them. He came when asked and he helped them. No other god in the cosmos does that. That's why Thor is Thor, because Thor is the only god that is worth a damn. That's what counters Gore's argument that all gods must die. It's like, if all gods must die, then that means also this good god who will, like, he actually will answer prayers. He will be there for people. Faith in MCU Thor is not wasted. because it's like faith in the act of doing good, not some fucking imaginary deity with gold running through his veins. Yeah. God damn it. These are like, even from an existential nihilistic point of view, this is an amazing way to say, yeah, if nothing fucking matters, then embrace what feels good as a story. Embrace what brings you happiness and peace and joy and helps bring others that. If nihilism is the true root of reality, if there's nothing else, then you have to make that all the better. And you got to be the best fucking Thor you can. You know, like, God damn it. What a great film to show kids. And so child friendly, even with the screaming goats. We've been going for 55 minutes and there's still so much to say. I love his back tat. Holy shit, Russell Crowe is fantastic.
I just want to one last thing with Core's narrative that I was trying to get to, which is that speaking of kids, and like for me as someone who works with kids, and because of that, you know, has my own attachments to children, and like this entire movie, I am so happy. My heart is so full. I'm good. I'm in a wonderful place. And then Core, Taika Waititi, you bastard. We get to that final bit of narration where we find out what the movie title is actually referring to.
Yeah.
And I'm just done. The credits start rolling and I am in tears.
Just
magnificent bastard.
Oh, brilliant. So yeah, I even lost my train of thought there for a minute because I was trying to say, he is a magnificent bastard because Korg is telling this story. The movie is Korg telling a story around a fireplace. He's the narrator, and at one point he dies. And you never during that go, oh my god, he can't die, he's gonna come back. Like, he hasn't narrated long enough in the story to that point that it doesn't come to mind, and you think he's dead until it's revealed. Turns out Cronin's, you know, like, it's only their face that's sentient, and Korg's fine, he'll be all right, don't worry about it. And so he lives to keep telling the tale, and it's like, Taika Waititi, you double-crossing bastard. You got me. Ah! So good. So good.
I mean, also, just with how Rise of Skywalker completely fails in terms of character death with Chewie.
Yes.
Knowing that the next Star Wars film is supposed to be Taika Waititi's is just so reassuring.
You know what would be really funny is if, like, in every single give him a trilogy, and in every single one of them he fakes out Chewie's death, and every time it becomes like more hackneyed and obvious. Where's Chewie? And the camera just pans to the right, and he's there in waves. And it's like, oh, there he is.
The only thing with that is, I believe he has specifically said he's not using any existing characters.
Oh, that's good.
Like it's all just completely from scratch, new.
Like, good. Yeah. I want to see what he comes up with. He's fantastic. He does great stuff. There's great background details in this, especially in Omnipotent City. It's the characters. Korg's god has a throne of scissors, which is a stupid joke, and I love it. That is so dumb. Yes. Everything about this film, I can understand why people are having reactions to it, because hyped it up in their head as something else, and they're responding to not having what their imagination came up with, which is like, there's an answer to that. Become a writer and put it on the page, change the names, and go. You can go, you can have it both ways. That's how Thor stories occur. You come up with one that you would like to see, and then you write it down, and then it becomes a Thor story, and then you maybe get it published if you're lucky, and if not, it doesn't matter. It's still a Thor story. People have been telling Thor stories for thousands of years. You can tell a Thor story. It's okay. Sorry that it's not what was on screen. You don't need to be upset about that, though. It seems to become a popular boogeyman with Marvel movies is like, oh, I thought it was going to be this and it wasn't, so I don't like the movie.
That, it's like, yeah, no, there's, I think there's that, and then there's also something that we often see with sequels in general, where like the first movie just surprises everyone, goes off, is just put on this like ridiculously high pedestal. Yeah. As I mean, on the one hand, yeah, Ragnarok deserves that because it was a wonderful, oh, we did not see that coming.
Yeah, and like I don't know yet if like I no, the ranking on this is not hierarchical. It can't be, because
no.
Thor Ragnarok is a different kind of fantastic. Yes. And this is an entirely separate kind of fantastic. They just exist in kind of different realms of awesome. They're a multiverse of awesome. Stop trying to make it a competition.
Yeah, no, it's like I get why the comparison occurs. It's like we've just seen that so many times with superhero movies. It's just inevitable.
Yeah.
It's just also incredibly unfair to this movie.
Yeah. No, absolutely. This film, you'll either love it for its incredible imagination and spirit, and it's just like powering through some of the silliest shit you'll ever see. Like, you know, you'll either love it for all of that, or you'll be really annoyed because, like, I'm sure it does seem like kind of rapid and janky and silly and weird. And it's like, yeah, okay. You don't get it. That's all right.
Basically, yeah.
It's okay that you don't get this movie. I do. I love it. I fucking love this movie. I fell in love with a comic book run, and they handed it to me in film with screaming goats. Fuck, I'm happy. I'm good. And I think we're going to see a conclusion or continuation, if not at least, of the Taika Waititi Odinson trilogy. It's not done yet.
Yeah, logically, no. I mean...
And then we're going to get the Asgardians, you know.
There was that other stinger setting up the entry of Hercules, and...
Yes! I hope
it's that. I've seen enough Hercules in the comics to know that, yeah, if we're going to give Hercules to anyone, it kind of needs to be Taika Waititi.
Yeah, because, like, that's inherently silly. I mean, like, it was a chore enough getting audiences to be interested in the Norse god Thor. Like, they had to call in Kenneth Branagh to literally, like, Shakespeareize the entire thing for the intro of it. You know, you had to kind of, like, slowly bring someone wading into the water with Thor. But now that we've found the energy and the audience understands what this is, Taika can literally have, again, idiot... Heracles. His name's Heracles. Hercules, come in and just be this wonderful foil to Thor, like a mirror image, pretty much exactly. In fact, they likely have a basis in the same like proto-Indo character, because they're both like hero gods who carry general like clubs and stuff like that. As well, Baal was also closely tied with Thor, another hero god, a thunderer who protected the people. So this is a reoccurring thing, and Hercules specifically, aside from like just being a big dumb idiot god who can fight a big dumb idiot god, that,
yeah, you
know, simple math there, he very much is Thor. He's got the exact same like character layout. You know, he's the son of the king of the gods, who, like, he never in the stories becomes necessarily king of the gods, even though he would be the prince of the gods, it's kind of presumed. But, like, he's a great hero, and he goes out and has heroic quests and blah, 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 blah. His one of his family members betrays him, blah, 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 blah.
Well, and I think also not only that, but as I had talked about in our review of Top Gun Maverick, where those dogfighting scenes of Maverick versus Hangman, what was kind of like 2022 Maverick versus 80s Maverick. If what we saw from Zeus was any indication of what they're going to do with Hercules, you could almost make the case that the fight that is pretty much inevitable for the next Thor movie, you could almost say that it's current Thor versus first movie Thor.
Oh yeah, that'll be really good. Yeah, because like we'll get like established responsible dad Thor, trying to like talk sense into idiot version. You know, idiot younger version of him, Thor. And maybe that's the way they'll do that from the Jason Aaron run, because instead of, like, literally having a younger time-traveling Thor appear, just have another character who more or less is that version of Thor.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, Hercules in general is this drunken, arrogant warrior.
Yeah, he's not a bad guy. He is an Avenger, to be clear. He eventually becomes an Avenger, but he is a violent, stupid, drunk, arrogant prick. He's Hercules. Hercules is a Greek hero, which means douchebag tragic.
And what when we first meet Thor back in Thor 1, what was he?
Douchebag tragedy. So yeah, no, that's good call on that.
It really works
together. Yeah. I'm happy that Russell Crowe's Zeus survived, because I enjoyed it. A lot of people were saying that he's a fat joke, and it's like, no, I think that's just Russell Crowe.
No, like they clearly did not ask Russell Crowe to lose weight or anything for the role, and Zeus is basically Odin if Odin was a frat boy for his entire life.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, no, this works. I don't know. That was weird. Actually, I've seen a lot of people say that the movie is like fat phobic, and it's like that's really odd, because he loses his weight almost immediately in the beginning of the film. Because his weight represented depression.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't like that, because, you know, it's not true for everyone. It was true for me, so I actually do resonate with this, but it doesn't have to be true for you, and the film's not talking about your experience and journey with that. But it's one of those confusing things, because, like, okay, so what... wouldn't it be worse if he wore a fat suit the entire movie? Because there's also a controversy right now about actors wearing fat suits. And it's like, Chris Hemsworth's not going to actually put on all that weight. He's got an incredible body that they pay him millions and millions and millions of dollars to maintain. Would people have actually been happier if he wore a fat suit throughout and you got a bunch of fat jokes? Like, I don't understand. It's a lose-lose, really. Like,
and as I often say, it's right and righteous. You can't have both.
Yeah, yeah. And again, the story is about the evolution of the character of Thor. And Fat Thor was a Thor. Absolutely. He's a lovable, fantastic, valid Thor. He finds his power again. He finds that he is worthy again as that character. It's an important character in his story development. But it's time for another Thor. That's what Thors do. They change. They change and do good.
And also, like, with Russell Crowe specifically, like, quite simply, he looks like he's having a good time with this. And this man had to do Unhinged, Zack Snyder's Justice League franchise.
Mm.
And he's going to be in Kraven the Hunter. The man deserves this role. Let him have it.
Please let him just be in one comic book property that doesn't collapse into fire and flames.
Like, I'm sorry, some of the crap this man has done, he has earned this.
Yeah, like, yeah. Sorry, Russell Crowe. Like, you peaked, and then you did a bunch of, like, garbage. Like, not hard garbage. I mean, some of it's hard garbage. The Mummy's hard garbage. But it's, you know, like, bring him back. Find a way for him to fit. Yeah, have the entire pantheon, which will go off in other tangents. The Olympians and the Asgardians don't really fucking like each other. So that goes back, into a bunch of Walt Simonson stories. Like, there's stuff to do here. There's a ton of Walt Simonson, especially his more cartoony armor. And I love to see it because it's just, you're showing off. You're trying. It's like, I love a secure, insecure Thor who just, like, he still has those moments where he's like, oh, shit, I got it. He gets thrown off. He's never become cynical despite seeing so much.
Yeah, and also, like, let's be honest and also remember, the Asgardians still have Zeus's lightning bolt.
Yeah.
So if you need a real easy starting point for an Asgardian Olympic war, it's right there.
Give me back my lightning bolt. Give me back my lightning bolt.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, God, I love this film. You should definitely see it. It seems to be underperforming, but I truly don't care. It can do whatever it wants. And there's so much actually released now. Yay. There's stuff in the theaters.
Yeah. No, and I don't know if I would say underperforming. As I understand it, I think it's on track for a debut of about 140 million this weekend.
Yeah. It's so quote unquote underperforming, as in people look at like fucking Spider-Man and are like, okay, so every movie's going to be Spider-Man money, right? And it's like, not even Spider-Man movies are Spider-Man money sometimes.
No, and like quite simply, this is going to be, I believe, the highest opening for a Thor movie, like, ever.
Hey, so, like, still going strong.
I mean, underperforming, I don't think so.
Yeah, no, that's kind of like future's asshole talk. that's fair. I heard that, like, apparently as per, maybe it's just complainers looking to complain. People love to complain about Marvel, and like, yeah, I will absolutely say I'm really enjoying Marvel because I love its narrative structure. I just love how open-ended it is, and yet how interconnected and how well thought out it is, and it's just a pretty thing. It's a beautiful garden, and I understand that some people don't like that, and some people nitpick it, and whatever, but Jesus Christ, of all films, this is the one that is just the most overtly child-friendly. It literally is a story being told to children, which it reiterates a few times in case you get too up your ass.
Yeah,
stop!
And also, just because I know somebody listening is thinking this or saying this to themselves, But it's rated as low as Dark World on Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah, there's a reason Rotten Tomatoes should not be trusted.
Yeah, there's a reason why you've suddenly seen a bunch of people on Twitter claiming that Thor 1 was a beautiful piece of art. And it's like, I was in the theater for Thor 1. There were 6 other people. Not many people enjoyed Thor 1. I did, because I like Kenneth Branagh and Shakespearean hyperbole.
Yeah.
But a lot of people found it really dry. And of course, Dark World overshadowed that by being even worse. It's just connective tissue. It's just connective tissue. But like, you didn't give a fuck about Thor 1 the first time. And I'm pretty sure you couldn't pick Kenneth Branagh out of a lineup.
And the hilarious thing with Dark World specifically, it was all the people complaining and going on about how bad Dark World was at the time that made it more watchable when I went to see it. Because it was literally, I came out of the theater going, it wasn't great, but it really wasn't that bad.
I mean, it's not like fucking Ben Affleck's Daredevil or something. But yeah,
I didn't mind Ben Affleck's Daredevil.
I own the director cut of Ben Affleck's Daredevil, and to this day, will absolutely the hill I am destined to die on. I've already bought the plot for my corpse to just be rolled into a hole. Is that the Daredevil, the Ben Affleck Daredevil soundtrack is the most apt soundtrack ever created for the film it is in. It's not that it is the best soundtrack ever, but it is perfectly timed. The mood of each song is perfect for the exact scene that is occurring. You can listen to that soundtrack and see the whole movie in your mind. It is, it's one of those perfect soundtracks. It is not good music necessarily, but it is perfect for what the project was. And that needs to be respected, and I will die for it.
And especially considering that was a period with superhero soundtracks where those soundtracks were very much put together solely to promote that music.
Oh my fucking... I had the Ghost Rider soundtrack. I had the Thomas Jane Punisher soundtrack.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. And yeah, like they just, they would hire mostly new metal bands around then and just have them pump out a bunch of stuff that, like, you get your action song, you get your, like, character song, which like would be either Pensive or like broody and semi-romantic. You get like kind of like your villain songs. If I recall, Moby did the villain song for the Kingpin. It's just, it was a different era.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you like fun and are fun at parties, go see this movie. If you have children, bring your children to this movie and then be prepared to buy them merchandise. Oh my God, the merchandise. If you are a grumpy grump, go see this movie because I want your money to be as far away from you and in the hands of this film as possible. Because you're bringing it down, man.
Yeah, I am just waiting to go to the toy section of Walmart or visit Toys R Us, and there's plush goats that scream when you squeeze them.
I know the consumerism of these films can be grating and obvious sometimes, but one, I'm having fun. Two, at least they always keep it entertaining. Like, it's never like something that is overly fucking saccharine and obvious. It's instead like a flying cheap thing with two butts, or whatever, you know, like flying sloth thing with two butts, or screaming goats. It's fun.
Yeah,
it's obnoxious.
And also, as much as I actually did have a problem with the Guardians of the Galaxy sequence in this movie, just because, like, with Ragnarok, I had found that Taika Waititi does have a tendency to stay with jokes a little too long or hit the jokes one time too many.
And I think what he's doing there is he's attempting to reproduce the directing style of James Gunn, and that's maybe the result, I think. Because there is a definite tonal difference. Yeah. But I don't know. I love that because every one of the Guardians, like, it's the Guardians. It it's pretty much the same old Guardians, but there's like tiny little aspects like, my God, oh my God, Peter Quill's actually become a responsible adult.
Yeah.
He's not a man-child anymore. He gives good, deep advice in a non-toxic masculine way. What?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No,
Peter Quill?
Like yeah, like, the stuff like that does work, but I think there were jokes that, like he just stays on that little bit too long. There's a Jean-Claude Van Damme reference for no reason whatsoever.
Oh, no, I love that. I love that because of it's just pure 80s obnoxiousness of it, is of just like, how good a hero, how over the top is this going to get? Well, it's going to get like Jean-Claude Van Damme over the top. And it's like that, you know, I liked it because it was like, this is a film that includes a commercial for Old Spice, but I mean, yes, it's obviously that is a bought and paid commercial, literally is a bought and paid commercial for Old Spice. Like, you're watching it in the movie, but they're recreating one of the classic kind of esoteric Old Spice commercials with King Valkyrie. And it's just, yeah, that is exactly this film's approach to all of that goddamn nonsense, is just roll with it. Be really, really obvious and forward facing with it. And it's like, yeah.
Oh yeah. And like I just say, like, as much as for me, a lot of Waititi's jokes structurally can be really hit or miss, at the same time, it's fascinating to be able to say Taika Waititi's best running gag is screaming goats.
Yeah. Yeah. And that includes a movie in which Thor rides Stormbreaker like a broom.
Yeah.
Which, oh, that was lovely. This is easily our longest review ever. And it's simply because I could gush about this film, but I suppose at some point it just becomes, it's the best. It's the best.
Yeah.
So we should, yeah.
Bring
your kids
to
this. Go see it. Yeah. Enjoy this film, and if you don't, I'm really sorry for whatever it is that upsets you about it, but like, I think you're bringing that to it yourself. This film is about joy.
Oh yeah, no, this is wonderful, and if you're not leaving this movie at least content and in a very positive headspace, I don't know what to say to you.
Well, if you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, and subscribe. We would love to hear from you. Maybe send us a comment or send us an email at...
You can reach us at realgeeksHFX@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter, on the odd times that I remember to actually post things on our Twitter, which is at realgeeksHFX. And also, of course, don't forget about the ongoing Coast Magazine's Best of Halifax campaign, where you can go to vote.thecoast.ca. Sign in, you get emailed a link to log in. Go to the music and culture category, scroll down to Best Podcast, nominate us, and then we can go to, we get lucky, we can go to sponsors and be like, hey, see, look, we've been in an audio format for like less than a year, and we're already award nominated. Yay. Give us money.
Money, money. Give me money. Give all of us all of the cash in the world.
And then if you stick with us and support us the entire campaign, maybe we shock the world and actually get the best podcast award and take that to sponsors and even more successful, and we can make a better show. And again, it's just good for everyone.
Yeah, and then we'll do a very extra super special episode, which will be based on a poll on Twitter. So be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
Also,
Twitter poll and probably a drunk show.
Yeah, probably a drunk show. And finally, one last awesome shout out to Lenore Zan, whose name one I kept mispronouncing as Zan. Lenore Zan, who gave us a shout out. Yay! Thanks for listening. Love you, sugar.
I love how she had actually heard that episode before I had a chance to hear that episode.
See, yeah, no, that's how I know that we're coordinated. Fuck.
It was like I had put out the links on Twitter, but I just hadn't gotten a chance to listen to the episode yet, and it's already getting a response from her.
Oh, too good. All right, we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
See ya.